Instagram thinks our attention span lasts a whole 60 seconds. Twitter becomes more accessible. And the Oculus Rift is a little like Clockwork Orange, but it's worth it. All that and more on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1480, recorded Tuesday, March 29th, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by FreshBooks, a super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at freshbooks.com/TNT. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT for 30% off your entire order. Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about all the tech news with people who love technology. I am Megan Maroney. Jason Howell is out today, but joining me via Skype are Owen J.J. Stone and Matthew Ingram. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So Owen is a podcaster, a speaker, a developer, and he loves cat videos, right?
Love cat videos. They make people happy. I don't like cats, but I like cat videos.
And Matthew is a senior writer at Fortune Magazine and Canadian. Correct?
True. Accurate. Yes.
So that means you're a good person, basically.
Yes.
Saying you're Canadian means I'm better than you.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
It is true. I agree.
And, you know, I mean, I think sometimes I think your Twitter feed is awesome, Matthew. But I mean, I think sometimes people are surprised that you're Canadian. You're not necessarily Canadian on Twitter.
Well, I do. I spend a lot of time hanging around Americans. So I have a little bit of I ran into a guy actually from Gawker, and he was surprised. He said, "I thought you were just this mythical being who lived on the internet." And I said, "Yeah, that's pretty much true."
I think both of you are sort of mythical beings who live on the internet, and I'm bringing you down here to talk about the tech news.
Perfect.
So we should get started. The news broke yesterday, but since I've discussed it with both of you on our show before, I thought I'd get your take on the story. The FBI claims that an unnamed third party has unlocked the iPhone 5C that was used last year by a terrorist in San Bernardino. They're not saying who unlocked it or who has the ability to unlock it, and Apple has not commented yet. Although this sort of seems like the FBI swerving in a game of chicken, is this really, do you think this is a knock on iPhone security, Matthew?
You know, I actually think this, you can look at this in a bunch of different ways, but I actually would much rather it had proceeded the way it was going, because I think we could have all used some kind of precedent. I mean, both sides seem to want to push this in order to get some kind of precedent about what the FBI is entitled to do, what Apple has to do. And now it's kind of been short-circuited in a way. So the FBI got what they wanted. So now they're like, never mind, just forget it. Let's pretend this didn't happen. I have a feeling that, you know, they would much rather this all just went away, because I think it blew up more than they were expecting. But in a way, I think it would have been better to get some kind of precedent that could actually, you know, good or bad, that could give Apple something and you know, advocates who were supporting Apple something to sort of fight against or something to respond to. Now we're back where we were before. We don't really know what is happening. We don't know how the FBI got into it. We don't know what Apple's responsibilities are.
What do you think, Owen?
Man, first of all, I don't even really believe the FBI did it. I can't trust anything they say. I don't even know if they even got into the phone. Maybe they got tired of the backlash from the people that they didn't think they were going to get. They thought that the terrorism blanket healed all wounds, and it did not. They got a big pushback. Secondly, three people came out and said that they would hack the phone for the government. That one guy who owns a company, whatever, McAfee, whatever. McAfee, he said, look, Give me the phone for a week. I can do it. Anybody can do it. People are freaking out. They're like, oh, if anybody can hack a phone and what... Here's the thing. They wanted Apple to give them a master lock to open up everything at will without any effort. So, of course, somebody puts an effort. They have your device. They can get in your device. Nothing in that world is 100% bulletproof. So people are freaking out saying, oh, well, they can get – somebody could always get into your phone, especially if they had it. So this doesn't bother me at all. You know, the setting of president thing would be cool unless it didn't go in my favor, which I don't think government should be allowed to do it. So better no mandate than mandate in that case, I guess. But, you know, the phone got hacked into. Hopefully now they can solve all the world's terrorism problems with this one phone that probably had no information on it whatsoever. And we can go on about our day. They can hire out whoever for $300,000 a phone to hack people's phones when they get their hands on them. So, yippee.
So what about the bigger question? I mean, just about end-to-end encryption. And we've heard a lot about how now Apple's just going to make their phone stronger. I mean, do you think that phones should be, do you think everyone should be able to go dark if they want to?
I guess, I mean, I had a discussion with Leo about this on Twig. I'm kind of torn. I mean, I know that there are legitimate reasons why law enforcement might want information that's on a phone. It wasn't clear that this was one of those cases, but I'm willing to believe that there could theoretically be a case made that should be allowed. And if Apple doesn't have the ability to get in the phone, the owner of the phone is deceased. There's a secure enclave, you know, where you literally cannot hack the phone through normal methods. You know, it's possible that there could be implications for anti-terrorism or whatever. I just feel like this case was a really, really terrible example of what law enforcement might want to do. It just was full of holes. So I don't think it was the right case to sort of build a precedent on.
So this is, of course, all speculation, but if either of you care to speculate, do you think if this happened again, that it would be in Apple or the FBI's best interest to make it as public as this argument was?
I think Apple's probably going to do exactly the same thing in every case, because they've got to, you know, they've built their reputation on promising security, right? That's a big part of their sort of value proposition. If people found out that they were just unlocking phones willy-nilly behind the scenes for the FBI or the CIA or whoever, you know, I think they would lose a huge amount of public confidence.
Also, I want every phone to be Superman. You know, maybe if you get your hands on some kryptonite, you can mess with it, but for the most part, you're beat, and there's nothing you could do to stop it. That's why I want Apple to stay. That's how I want Apple to be, because it's not if the FBI or the CIA gets it. It's when that punk kid hacks the FBI or the CIA, puts it on the internet, and 3 million phones get their credit card IDs and stuff swiped or something like that. You know, there's a reason their security is so tight and such a big deal. Your phone carries your life. A lot of people have everything inside of their phone. So it needs to be protected. It can't be given out to everybody, and you can't trust the government. You trust them sometimes, but you can't trust them all the time, because they make mistakes just like they did locking up the phone that they had unlocked in the first place. I mean, really? Really? All this after somebody made a stupid mistake in the first place. And you're supposed to be the FBI and the CIA, and you still made a third grade mistake. My daughter knows to stop clicking the buttons after it says, hey, I'm about to give you a timeout. And she's 8. So, I mean, whatever. Keep locking up these phones. Make it as tight as possible. Keep me happy and secure.
All right, well, let's move on. Today, Google made a case for the landline. The company's new Fiber phone is a $10 a month service that offers unlimited local and nationwide calling, as well as their standard Google Voice for international calls. You also get voicemail transcription and 911 access, which is one good argument that many of us still have for keeping a landline around. The most interesting features might be that you can use the number in the cloud on almost any phone, any laptop, any tablet. What do you think about this, Owen?
I love Google Voice, so yay, Google Voice and the Fiber, same. You know, having a home phone, I don't have one, but a lot of people use them and need them. So, yay.
Yeah, you don't have, none of us have Google Fiber here, so we also can't get the Fiber phone.
I wish.
Yeah, before the show started, Owen said, you know, that if he had Google Fiber, he wouldn't even be talking to me right now.
I would not. I'd have so much other things to do and more important things. I'd be downloading. I'd be hacking into people's cell phones right now myself if I had Google Fiber. You could not stop me.
So what about the case for the landline? Is that something we still need, Matthew?
Well, I have to say I have one, and my arrangement with my cable company, which provides the landline and TV and internet and all my cell phones. They basically own me. It was actually cheaper to get the landline than to not get one. So, which seems dumb in a way, but I assume they get paid off by the people who try to sell me duck cleaning services. and that seems to be the only reason my landline exists, is either for my mom to call it or for duck cleaning services to call it. So I'm kind of thinking, even if it does cost more, I might actually just get rid of that thing.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these services have done this already. You know, I had one through Sprint and I had one through Comcast, and so they're not the first one. Go ahead, Owen.
I was going to say, even a lot of people's argument for having one is their security system. And my security system is set up through the Wi-Fi. Now, I guess if my internet goes down, you can feel free to break into my home. But that's why I have pit bulls for backup system security. But, I mean, a lot of things should just be on Wi-Fi. I just don't know why you need a home phone anymore. You know, when everything goes down, even landlines are probably going to be down, too. And if it's that bad, you're phone, beat anyway.
My home phone is VoIP anyway. So when the internet goes down,
okay,
home phone doesn't even work. So.
Well, then, okay, that's an even better point. Who's got legit old school landline phones anymore that doesn't go through a router or some other kind of internet system anyway? So no matter what, you're in trouble if something goes down.
Mm-hmm. Everybody should get a pit bull, I guess.
Yeah, you need one.
It's interesting when I first saw Google offering the phone and phone services, it just seemed so natural. They've got everything else. If you've got Google Fiber, why wouldn't you do this? I mean, it's got everything you could possibly want. It's super cheap. Google Voice, you can port the number. It's a no-brainer, it seems to me. Yep.
And I love Google Voice. It works awesome. The text conversion, I love everything about Google Voice. So, yay, fiber phone.
For those who have fiber. Well, it's another day and another chance for Instagram to change something and drive people bananas. Soon you'll be able to post 60-second videos to your feed, and so will everyone else, even the super boring people that you follow on Instagram. I'm not sure what's going on here. Maybe they're trying to be more like YouTube. Maybe it's an advertising ploy. What do you guys think?
It feels to me like all of those things. I mean, Instagram, let's face it, it's owned by Facebook. You know, they want to grow the network. Facebook is hugely interested in live video. They're pouring a lot of resources into it. You know, Facebook Live has been rolled out. They're going to be putting TV-type content on Facebook. Instagram feels like the kind of, you know, starter network where people can try out stuff a little bit like Vine. There's a huge amount of interest in that, not just from users, but from advertisers. So, you know, it may make our Instagram feeds a little less interesting, but it seems inevitable.
Advertisers could already post 60-second videos. So I guess average people like Kevin Hart can also post 60-second videos. And definitely worth watching that video. He does not get eaten by a lion.
It's funny that we think 60 seconds is hugely long now. You know, we're so used to, I'm old enough that I remember when 60 seconds was really short. And, but, you know, we've had so many like 6 second or 9 second or 60 seconds just seems like forever now.
It kind of does. That's a good point.
So this is the greatest thing next to sliced bread. I don't know what you two are talking about. Now, as a man who's down on VR and down on Snapchat and I sound like a grumpy old man, let me tell you. I follow about 200 people on Instagram that make skit videos. And some of these guys are never going to be anything in their life, but for 15 seconds, they are funnier than me. And that's hard to accomplish by a regular person that's not an actual comedian. So to give these people 60 seconds saves me the point of watching their 15-second video that says, click the link in the bio to see the full video. And now I get to stay inside of Instagram and live the dream and watch all these funny little stories that they have going on. And it is amazing, and I'm happy, and I love it because, you know, again, 60 seconds is short. People still are trying to make lists for things. It's amazing that 60 seconds feels like it's a long time, but that's why you have YouTube, and you can upload a video that's 8 hours long if you want to go in a long format, or Facebook. But I like the fact that they've done this, so now I can stay inside of Instagram instead of clicking out for this content that I watch to go see a longer version of it, which ends up being 45 seconds to a minute and a half anyway. Because they're like little, like I said, comedy skits and stuff like that. So, again, yippee. But this time it's for real. It's not me being facetious about fiber not having it. I'm actually excited about this, and it makes me happy. I don't like the algorithm thing because everybody's talking about turn on their notifications, which isn't going to do anything for you. Because if I turned on 30,000 notifications, let me just find out how the algorithm works first. But, you know, I don't like Facebook's algorithm, and I assume it's going to be very similar. So, whatever. But yay, 60 seconds.
Yeah, the notifications thing was funny, too. Again, like pointing to our children who know better than it seems the average person. Because that's what my daughter said. Like, how do these people expect me to turn on notifications for every single one of the people I follow? Like, that's a lot of notifications. Yeah, that is kind of crazy.
It's interesting, actually, that there's been a lot of negative reaction to Instagram's algorithm, even more than when Twitter said it was going to start doing algorithmic filtering, which surprised me. I've got a lot of, you know, family and friends who use Instagram a lot, and I can't think of a single one who thought this is going to be great.
Instagram, you naturally forever scroll. Like, if you've ever, if you ever look at Instagram, like, I go on Instagram at least 3 times a day. But in those 3 times, I'm 5 minutes deep on this. On Twitter, it's like, all right, let me catch up on, like, the last 5-10 minutes, see what's going on, what's a trending topic, let me see what people are conversing. Like, I don't really dig deep. I don't scroll back to yesterday on Twitter ever. But on Instagram, I'll legit go back and see what I missed the last 5 hours that I didn't check in until I hit the picture that I started with the last time. So I feel like that's a natural way that people move through Instagram, so it affects them emotionally more because they realize it more so than Twitter. Because also Twitter, people post X amount of times more than they would on Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram seemed manageable. It seems like you can get through it, like you're getting through all your emails or something. It was a project, you know, you had to do it and get it done. But now I think more and more people are joining Instagram. It seems unmanageable. I believe in the algorithm, I have to say.
Believe in the algorithm.
I'm not a trusted person. I don't trust the government. I don't trust algorithms. I don't trust people with rhythm that don't have rhythm. I can't tell. I don't know what's going on. I got to wait to see it and feel it. You know, like, again, Twitter does it. They tell me who said something 8 hours ago. And most of the time, it's people I don't care about, but they think I do. Mm. And I got to scroll past them. It's annoying.
Well, speaking of Twitter, Twitter made an announcement today that they will now let you add descriptions, also known as alt text, images that you post on Twitter. Now, if you've ever done any web production at all, you know that alt text descriptions make the internet more accessible to the visually impaired. Without alt text on images, screen readers and braille displays aren't very useful to people. To enable this feature, use the Compose Image Descriptions option in Twitter's Android or iOS apps accessibility settings, so said Twitter on their blog. But I updated my app and I tried to add this, and it wasn't available yet. But I think this is great news for Twitter.
Super awesome, great, positive. Anything to help others be more in touch with the content that's going on in the world so they're not left out is an amazing thing, and they should have done it sooner. Where have you been, Twitter? What have you been doing with yourself?
That's a whole different show.
Yeah. We say they should have done it. And I mean, what they're doing is allowing us to do it, essentially. And so the question I have is, like, you know, we move really fast. We want, you know, are we going to take the time to add a description? Even we know we should, to make it more accessible. But I think this points to the problem of, you know, we're all the creators of content. We're creating all this content and we're not getting paid to necessarily, you know, tweet. So it's a problem because I did freelance web production for many, many years, and it was part of my job. You never posted an image without adding alt text so for screen readers. But I was getting paid to do that by a big company. I'm not getting paid to tweet. So I don't know. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Some smart people will do it, though. The same reason why when you're doing YouTube videos, some people take the time to put in closed caption because they want to capture that market and those group of people. So whether you're sensitive to it or not, or most of the time when you're tweeting or talking, you want somebody to listen to you. And maybe nobody's ever looked at your pictures, but now you're going to take the time to put in alt text and you sky to the top of the Twitter sphere of picture navigation because you now take the time. It's your world. Make the move. It's chess, not checkers.
Good advice.
Just saying.
Well, I guess it seems, again, with the algorithms, that an algorithm should be able to do this. I think Facebook is already working on this, an algorithm that can look at photos and add the alt text so screen readers can see them. So
Google's working on that as well.
Yeah, so I guess I am applauding Twitter and also saying, could you do it a little bit better?
I actually remember, again, I'm I'm dating myself, but I remember in the early days of the web, people would use the alt text to crack jokes or make sort of inside references, or in some cases they would stack the alt text with keywords because they thought Google would help, you know, there's, it would help Google show their stuff.
Yeah.
I still remember that.
Right. Or the alt text, if you ever looked at it, it would just be like jobs, 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 or naked naked people, whatever it was.
Yeah. Britney Spears.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, oh, we are old fashioned.
Yeah.
I don't know what you people are talking about. Never heard of it. Never saw it. No clue.
All right. Well, I hope to have this turned on, and I will make an effort to add alt text to my images on Twitter. Let's move on. Last year, Google-owned GPS app Waze was criticized over a feature that helped drivers avoid speeding tickets by notifying them when the police were nearby. A new feature announced today takes a different approach by notifying drivers that they're speeding. It's unclear exactly how this works. Fortune suspects using your speed and the speed of others around you. Any other ideas about how this works?
Yeah, that's how Waze does basically everything. You know, they sample your app, they sample everyone around you's app. They may even be getting info from traffic services, for all I know. I'm actually constantly amazed by how accurate Waze is. And maybe that sounds dumb, but when I first started using it, I thought, you know, no one's going to actually put things into this app, like while they're driving, like there's a cop up ahead or there's a car on the side of the road. And yet I've come to rely on it so much to tell me which way to go, because it is always right. It always knows that there's something up ahead, or and it's, there's just a massive amount of information in there. It's really amazing in a way.
Do you trust Waze, Owen?
I feel like your statement is very fanboy fall in love, because I think I've been using GPS for a long time and they usually get me to my destination. I'm still here. Never got lost. Never got lost with a bear in the woods. Never had a problem. I mean, Garmin, my old suck them to the dashboard GPS used to blink at me when I went over the speed limit. Also, it would tell me 65. And as soon as I did 72, it'd be like blinking in my face all the time. And that was a long time ago, because the last three cars I've had navigation built in. So whoop-de-doo Waze, that's really cool. Johnny come lately, thanks a lot. I mean, you know, and usually by the time I'm driving so fast, if a cop sees me, Waze ain't gonna help me. It's too late. I've already passed him and he's coming. So, but yeah, yay Waze, and alerting me on my speed and telling me to slow down. I appreciate you, even though I don't use you.
Well,
see, I might have got screwed. Maybe I got screwed on my GPS in my car, because that thing is terrible. Like, it constantly tells me to go the wrong way. It's a Hyundai Veracruz. It's an aftermarket GPS. And I mean, it's a few years old, but the thing that bugs me the most is they want me to pay like $100 to download new maps. And I don't even know if those maps are going to update places where I even go. So why would I do that? I can just use my phone. So I just stick my phone on top of the GPS.
And I'm using the Hyundai, and it works great. Yeah. I have a Sonata Turbo, and it's always right. And it tells me the speed, and it talks to me. It even dings when I get close to. Yeah, that's the thing. And $100 sounds like a lot, though. I guess keep using Waze. Wait, doesn't Waze do fun voices and stuff, too? Isn't that one of the cool things?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. It's worth it. I should download Waze right now. I made a mistake.
Sold.
So the speed warnings are only available in 18 countries, not the U.S. or Canada, but Austria, Brazil, Colombia, France, Italy, Netherlands. Oh. I guess it'll roll out, you know, some other
places. Why not the U.S. or Canada? That seems weird.
I don't know. Probably some legal thing we don't understand. But yeah.
Again, my GPS is right there in that bin. It's been sitting there for 6 years. That thing tells me the speed and how fast I'm going. Like that thing. So come on, Waze. You got all this money, all this Google power. You're supposed to be driving yourself, and you can't tell me the speed. I'm upset.
Oh, well, at least we know you both have Hyundais, so.
Yeah. One's updated, one's not.
Yeah.
All
right.
There you go. User experience. Different experiences.
Mm-hmm. Well, up next, Avinja Hardawar is here to give his first impressions of Oculus Rift. But first, let's take a minute to thank FreshBooks, the sponsor of this episode. It's nearing tax time, but if you're a freelancer or a small business, sometimes it feels like it is always nearing tax time. You got into this job for the freedom of it, but I am guessing that those stacks of receipts and spreadsheet formatting nightmares were not part of your dream job scenario. You need a Boston Dynamics robot to help, or FreshBooks. Our friends at FreshBooks have created easy-to-use cloud accounting software that makes dealing with your taxes way less taxing. Getting started on FreshBooks couldn't be easier, even if you're not a numbers person. Create and send invoices efficiently, plus get paid online quickly with FreshBooks payments. You also have the option to request a deposit in FreshBooks and get paid up front. No more covering costs out of pocket or waiting until the end of a project to get paid. And they've made it incredibly easy for you to track your billable time. FreshBooks recently announced their new EMV chip card-enabled card reader, which I have right here. This card reader is already popular with IT professionals like the folks who come to your house and fix all your tech. You just plug it right into your device. Your clients will have no more excuses not to pay you. Now you can easily accept credit cards wherever business takes you, quickly and securely with their entirely redesigned iPhone app. Plus, create beautiful invoices in just seconds. With FreshBooks, you can focus on what you love most, growing your business. You'll wonder why you didn't start with FreshBooks sooner. Getting started is simple, and it's totally free for 30 days. Go to FreshBooks.com/TNT, and don't forget to enter Tech News Today in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Start your 30-day free trial today, and we thank FreshBooks for supporting this episode of Tech News Today. So all this week, we've been talking to our favorite reviewers who have had hands-on, or should I say face-on time with the brand new Oculus Rift. Today we're talking to Devendra Hardawar from Engadget, who says the Rift requires lots of hardware and a big investment, but it's worth it. Welcome, Devendra.
Hey, Megan. How's it going?
It's going well. So you write that the Oculus has a lot to prove. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's the first big, you know, VR product to actually reach consumers, and I think that that just means, like, this is the one we're all looking at. The HTC Vive is coming out soon, and that's going to be important as well. But, you know, this one is backed by Facebook. There's been all that hype. There was that incredible Kickstarter campaign 4 years ago. And, you know, this is like a tech fairy tale, right? How many times do those Kickstarter campaigns actually live up to the potential? So I think there was a lot riding on the Oculus. I'm very glad to see that, you know, it kind of lived up to that potential.
So you say this is the real deal. What can you say a little bit more about that?
It's tough. And every time I talk about VR, it's people's eyes tend to glaze over, right? Because you've heard about this for years. We've all seen Lawnmower Man. We've all seen, like, the stuff and heard about sci-fi, you know, theories of VR for years. But it actually works. It gives you that full sense of presence and immersion, which is the thing people who talk about VR really aim for, right? It's the idea that you put this thing on your head and, you know, you just are transported to a completely different place. And I think the Oculus pretty much gets there. It could use better resolution, slightly better imaging technology for its glass, what you're actually looking through. And it could be a little easier to use as well. Like, it's expensive. It's $600. And you need a really powerful gaming PC to use it. So there are a lot of downsides. But I think what's most important is that, you know, it actually works. I put this on, I can play some really great games and have experiences I've never had before. And I've, you know, I've been gaming my entire life.
So did you have to upgrade anything in order to make it work? Upgrade anything on your own side?
Not really. I was kind of lucky because last year I was doing a PC rebuild after years of watching tech TV and all you guys. So last year I had the idea that I knew VR was coming. So I just kind of spec'd up at that point. So I had like the PC and the RAM and everything I needed. I got a video card last year that I was testing out that I still have, the AMD R9 Fury X, which is pretty fast. So I had the PC ready to go. I was able to just plug in the Oculus and get going. Didn't have any trouble. And I don't really have even any performance issues. You know, I've tested 4K gaming on the same computer, and that's a little too much. VR is less intense than that, but that's a good thing. I think VR is so much more useful and interesting than 4K PC gaming.
So Owen is he's a VR skeptic. Uh-huh. Would you try to convince him, or would you just say, just wait?
You just got to, more than just wait, you just got to try it. That's the thing. Like, have you tried anything, Owen?
So I haven't tried anything in the last 6 months.
Okay.
We could be friends because you brought up Lawnmower Man, so that instantly made you a brother to me, because that's what I'm talking about when I tell people all the time. They've been promising me this for my lifetime.
Existence.
And I still haven't got, you know what I mean? I still got my Nintendo set in the box upstairs waiting to sell it on eBay to make some money. Mm-hmm. But I just have two general questions for you. I see you wear glasses. What is your astigmatism?
I don't know what it is. I'm like nearsighted.
Are you... Are you blind when you don't have your glasses on?
I'm pretty much blind. Like, I really have to hold things up close. So I still need to wear my glasses with VR. I can't take them off. Like, it's still too blurry if I take them off. And it fits, you know, it's, I have it right here, actually. So this thing, it's surprisingly light. And it's big enough to fit my glasses in. And that's, you know, I have a decent sized glasses. If I was wearing metal rims or something, that would maybe be a little too hard. But these are plastic, and it's fine. It's just, you got to juggle it.
That was one of my main questions, because obviously everything else is subjective. So some people are for, some people against. But sure. I was wondering how it felt to you. So yet you have all these positive things to say, and you were wearing them with your glasses on, which is a little bit more impressive. And you're doing it with a PC that you built a little bit ago, and it's keeping up with the plug and play. That feels a little bit better too, because a lot of people are thinking they got to go run out and just buy something. I mean, you need the specs to match up, but
basically
maybe you got something inside the last year.
That's what they're saying is like the minimum, right? A Core i5 processor, an NVIDIA GTX 970 or equivalent ATI card. So these aren't like the crazy high-end PC specs. These are pretty, like, if you've built a gaming PC in the last year, you're probably good to go.
And last question, what's your favorite video game you've played? Not on Oculus, Valkyrie, just in general. What's your favorite
game? They're showing on the screen right now is Eve Valkyrie. For VR, it's Eve Valkyrie.
No, not for VR. Okay. I'm trying to learn about you as a person so I can trust
me as
your
a person,
judgment.
Chrono Trigger from the Super Nintendo. I'm all about Chrono Trigger. Chrono Trigger's like my jam. Right. But for the VR stuff, I'll tell you guys.
I believe you.
Eve Valkyrie. Put that on. Like, if you've seen Battlestar Galactica, if you've ever seen Last Starfighter and you wanted that sense of like being in a cockpit and like looking around and like there are all these ships and things flying around you, that's going to sell you on VR, man.
All right.
I got one question. Do you get motion sickness at all?
Not really. And I do. No. I do. I've talked to a couple of people who have issues with that around VR, but I don't have motion sickness outside of VR. I've been able to play, you know, that space game for hours on end without any issues. The only really uncomfortable part is that it kind of forces you to open up your eyes a little more. So it does feel like you're in that a Clockwork Orange torture chamber where your eyes are just like held open for way too long. It's not a great thing to do right before bed. I'll say that.
Because I've tried a couple. I tried a Gear VR demo. I tried, I think it was an Oculus demo. It was an early one, though. And I have to admit, some of the movement just triggered, like, I get motion sickness brushing my teeth. So, like, it triggered something, and I had to take it off. And I don't know if it was just the movement was too fast or whatever kicked in. I have to say that's my main fear about.
I would say try the new hardware if you can, because the hardware, what's interesting is like every couple of months, Oculus has like updated their, you know, their kits, and HTC Vive updated pretty quickly too. And Oculus just implemented this new software in their API that kind of makes the motion blurring less of a problem.
Okay.
It kind of just deals with that. Gives the video cards, I think, a little bit of extra buffering, but they're definitely aware of the issues. So that's kind of the thing you have to fix, right? If everyone's going to get sick when they use this, it's not going to sell.
Yeah.
So Owen makes a good point. You know, he wanted to figure out what you were like to say, decide if he trusted your opinion. I mean, what do you make of the, you know, I think a lot of the tech blogs, the tech reviewers that I've read that have tried a bunch of different VR, and then this is just amazing. Whereas like the mainstream reviewers are just like, it's really expensive. What do you say to that?
I mean, I think we could look back to like the invention of the internet, right? Or the personal computers, like the super nerds, the people who were really into Radio Shack back in the day. They're like, you know, they're the ones who are really on that. And I feel like this is a platform shift on that level. You know, it reminds me of like when I first got on the internet and like I could see a whole world of possibility in front of me. So, I'm not surprised maybe some of the mainstream reviewers aren't as impressed. And, you know, they have good reason not to be, because there are only so many games right now. The whole platform has to be a little more mature. Developers really have to learn what to do with this stuff. And the hardware could be a little cheaper and a little more comfortable. But, you know, give it a year or two. Like, I'm looking at the potential here. Even though I have glasses, there are a lot of things that make me not want to wear a VR headset for very long. The Oculus is, like, comfortable enough. It's light. It's easy to wear. So that's all.
That's a big VR's deal.
Yeah. I think ease of use is a big deal. I have the HTC Vive. This is the Vive Pre in my office as well. And you can see it's a lot bigger. Mm. It's so much bigger. And this is, I don't know if we could get both up. But it's just a lot bigger. There are more cables, so it's a little more cumbersome too. So that's, I think, one interesting thing Oculus has done is just made their hardware, made their whole setup process a lot easier for normal people to get used to.
I'm going to have to run up the turnpike and come hang out at your house for the day.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, stick them off. I'm waiting until it comes out for the PlayStation. And then after I see that, hopefully the Oculus will have more titles, more games, and then I might switch into that. After I find that I like it somewhat, I just can't. I've been against it so long.
Do a demo for any of this stuff. The PlayStation VR is interesting, but it's entry level $400 for just the VR set. But you need to own the PlayStation 4. You're going to need the PlayStation camera and the motion controllers and all that. So that ranks up the price too.
Yeah, they've already got all my money for that. That's why I was waiting.
Yeah.
So could you imagine watching a movie with them?
It's a little different. So I actually think I'm a big movie fan. I do a movie podcast every week for slashfilm.com. I've been doing that for years. I love movies. The VR stuff, it's not quite great for movies and for media. There are 360-degree videos out there. You've probably seen them. You can watch them on YouTube now and scroll your browser around. But I actually find that the Gear VR, just because it's more portable and it's wireless, I'd rather watch the videos on that thing rather than this thing, which is tethered to my PC. And those videos don't need all the horsepower that a gaming desktop does. So it feels like I'm just kind of stepping down the experience a little just by watching those videos. But when there are 4K VR headsets and the resolution is just much better, maybe that could be a really interesting way to watch videos.
Well, Devendra is a senior editor at Engadget and host of the Filmcast. What other reviews? I'm assuming you have a Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
Review
we just we just finished that. That was 2.5 hours of venting about how much that movie hurt me. So you could listen to that on slashfilm.com. I am working on HTC Vive review right now, and those are all going to be hitting next week, I believe.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Thanks, Devendra.
Thanks.
After the break, we've got working VR, what's next, flying cars, space tourism. We will discuss, but first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. If you are a parent, one of the greatest joys in life is when your son or daughter learns to play an instrument. But unless it's a piano, you're going to spend a lot of your waking hours wondering where your child is going to leave that super expensive instrument that you've rented or bought and how much it's going to cost to replace it. You might want to consider Tracker, a device that makes losing things a thing of the past. It's a coin-sized miracle that locates misplaced keys, wallets, bags, computers, even pets in seconds. Pair Tracker to your iOS or Android device, attach it to anything via key loop or adhesive, and find its precise location with the tap of a button. If you lose your phone, you can press the button on Tracker and your phone rings even when it's on silent. The Tracker Bravo is constructed with beautiful anodized aluminum for the thinnest and most durable tracking. With over 1.5 million devices, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world, so your lost item shows up on a map even if it's miles away. If an item goes missing, the Tracker app records its last known location on a map. When another user of the Tracker app comes within 100-foot range of your lost item, you will receive a GPS update of where your item is. Go to thetracker.com and never lose your possessions again. Plus, just for our audience, if you enter promo code TNT, you'll get 30% off your entire order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT for 30% off your entire Tracker order. Our TNT fan of the day is MacGuru42 on Instagram, who posted this photo of himself listening to the show. He says he listens while driving on the Bluetooth radio or with headphones when working. You can show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we will find it. So we are always in search of the next best thing. And there's a piece in Fortune today about how what comes next now, what does come next now? Our dreams of virtual reality have been fulfilled. Is it the Hyperloop, teleportation, time travel, or the Star Trek-inspired tricorder medical device, or smart pants, perhaps? Maybe something else entirely. What do you think? Owen, I'll start with you.
After that long list of things, I mean...
I named all the things.
Smart you pants. Did name all the things. I mean, again, the skeptical part of me is, you know, we have Teslas and we still can't get our cars right. But everybody's talking about self-driving cars. But we can't even get rid of these fossil fuels. I mean, it's just a weird world we live in. But if there was something cool about the future, I would say food, because people don't realize that we're running out of it. But there's a cool company who made a bleeding burger out of vegetables or something like that. And that's really cool that they're finding different ways to make meat out of things that we could grow, which is awesome. So the future is food and cool things being made from different types of food that's not tofu. I mean, I forget what it is. It's driving me crazy, but thing.
The first, a
vegetable burger that is juicy and bleeds like medium rare, and people bit it. People ate it, and look at it. It's juicy. Right. It's a little medium rare. I don't know. I mean, you want me to believe VR? You're not going to believe in that burger. You can actually see. You can see that burger. You can touch it, and somebody's making it somewhere. Again, we're running out of food. So this kind of stuff is important. That's our future. What are we going to do when there's too many people and there's not enough cows?
Right, because even if we are in the beautiful VR universe, we still have to eat, right?
Apparently.
For now.
You saw Snowpiercer, right?
No. Horrible people. We have a home project this week.
You can see the future of food.
Snowpiercer. Got it.
Bugs.
There you go. Bugs? Oh, see, I know about that. No. Maybe that's what I need to lose some weight, but I cannot.
When I was
in China, I tasted things like that, and I've eaten some things. Bugs are the worst. Yes, they're high in protein, but they're like alive, and people eat them alive. It's scary.
Yeah.
Anyway, Matt, what are you talking about the future? Now you got bugs in my brain.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if bugs are the future, but I have to say some of those things in the future or in the fortune piece felt a little more real than others. I mean, time travel, I don't know, maybe someone will come up with something. Teleportation has been proven kind of in a lab with, you know, special particles. I don't think we're probably going to get teleportation pods anytime soon. But, autonomous vehicles and Hyperloop and stuff feels like that stuff is pretty close. Commercial space travel feels like, you know, we're pretty much right there. That stuff is pretty fascinating. The idea that, you know, in not too long, it probably won't cost that much. You could go up into space, on one of Jeff Bezos' things or Elon Musk's vehicles. That's pretty cool. The Hyperloop, I'd like to see one. Like, I'd like to ride in one before I'm going to get excited about having a Hyperloop take me places. But it sounds like it's got a huge amount of potential, especially for places like Canada where cities are so far away.
I was going to say, I think the Hyperloop is real. Like, that's something I know, like, legit is going to work out. I believe in the Hyperloop. Not so much for person transport. That feels like it's a way off without scrambling people's brains. But just shipping items. Yeah. Like, you know, throw those bad boys in the ocean and bye-bye freighters. So, you know,
that
seems like something very interesting.
Like robot vehicles, I feel like we're probably going to see those really come into their own with delivery of packages, right? Where you got a truck filled with stuff from Amazon or eBay or whatever, and it drives around by itself and little things drop off packages or drones bring them to your house. Or I could see that happening pretty quickly. Why does some guy have to drive that truck?
Good point.
I see him driving across country. Like, I know that they're working on like the 18-wheeler that drives themselves. As far as my UPS guy, I need my UPS guy to drop my packages off. People steal stuff in general. I can't have him dropping off the street.
True.
A truck can't come up to my door. And drones, I don't know where you live because you're Canadian and people are nice, but people are shooting drones out of the sky. People are stealing drones. No. So we can't. We need humans to drop off our stuff. They can drive across country. We can use automated trucks and stuff like that for that. But door to door, we need some service, man. We need people to have jobs. You can't put do you ever watch The Future? When robots do all the work, don't you notice that life is really horrible? It's always raining. It's always sad. People at, you know, the affluent people, there's like three people that read books or something. But usually people are like homeless in these streets because they don't have jobs because robots are doing everything. So let's pump the brakes a little bit on these robots and keep my UPS guy out here working and let me shoot down drones on the weekend for fun.
I know that little Domino pizza delivery robot looked pretty cool.
They have that new car.
Keep your pizza hot.
Yeah, they have that new car. I saw that. That's funny.
So there's no non-dystopian future for robots, is what you're saying.
I don't want it to be. I don't. Again, I said, usually when I watch the future, either robots figure out that we're evil people and they take over the world, or people are just sad and depressed and on Zoloft all day because they have nothing to do and no purpose. Like,
not
robots
Star Trek,
doing all their work.
Star Trek, everything's clean and everybody's happy.
Yeah.
Until the Klingons come along.
And everybody's trying to leave the planet in Star Trek. Nobody wants to stay on Earth. When's the last time that you
saw
Earth?
There's a pizza robot, yeah.
They're out there running around. They don't.
I got to say, some of the... This occurred to me when we were talking about VR, but some of the stuff that interests me the most about these types of technologies is how they're going to impact the lives of people who are not like me, like someone who can get in a car and drive wherever I want, or, you know, I have eyes at work and ears at work, and I'm not trapped lying in bed all day. I'm not in the hospital, you know, forever hooked up to machines. Like, some of the most fascinating applications for VR that I've seen are to allow people who can't, literally can't go out in the world and see things, to see things that they've never seen before, to walk around Rome or Paris or, you know, do things that they literally can't do because they're trapped for physical reasons or whatever in bed or homebound. That kind of stuff is potential for that technology is massive.
I saw that video and, you know, I'd be like, so I yell about VR all the time because I can't stand it. But I did see that video where they had children in a hospital in a cancer ward, and they had elderly people in an elderly home. And it warms your heart to see an older woman looking at a dinosaur, walking with dinosaurs and looking around and being in that world. And again, to her, she probably hasn't even looked at a video game or any kind of technology really in the last 10 years. So to put that on for her, like, it brightened her day. It changed her world. Those kids, again, that can't leave their floor because of their illness or their sickness, like that kind of stuff. I'm all for VR all day because that is where it's human at its basic point. And my biggest thing is, again, you want to have virtual reality. What it leads to is people want to talk to people, interact, and live that second life world where they don't interact with people. But with those instances, those moments were heartwarming to see and amazing.
And imagine if you're in a wheelchair or something like that. If you had an autonomous vehicle, you could just drive your wheelchair in there, and the car takes you where you want to go. That would be an amazing, you know, amount of freedom for someone who usually has to call some special van or, you know, get someone with special equipment. If they had their own vehicle, could go wherever they want, that'd be hugely, you know, liberating for them.
Matthew, we just met. I don't need you to make sense and make me feel bad about my decisions with some other things that are really good moves. You know, that's not, we're talking about corporate greed and people being lazy, Matt. Okay, don't come in here with this common sense, we're saving the world stuff. I can't take it.
Sorry. All right.
So VR in moderation, perhaps.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was hoping bringing you two together would make magic, and I think it has. So thank you both for coming. Owen,
sure has.
I think it has. Owen, tell us where we can find all your work online.
I'm on the internet until I get Google Fiber, and once I get that, I am the internet. So you can find me on Twitter at Odocta, or what I'm podcasting at IQMZ.com. I'm out there waiting for you. Come say hi to me. I'll say hi back. That's how the internet works.
And Matthew, you have a great piece today about Obama's criticism of internet news. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I was writing about some remarks he made about the media and how the media... You know, he suggested that the media wasn't really doing its job. He referred kind of obliquely to Donald Trump and how the media hasn't been challenging him enough. And, you know, the journalists need to do more than just post tweets about things. They need to do more investigative journalism. And yet the Obama administration has resisted more attempts to do that than almost any other administration in recent memory. It's got the record, I'm pretty sure, for resisting or blocking or withholding freedom of information requests. There's been a number of journalists who've faced jail time for doing their jobs. So I don't think Obama's necessarily the guy to be telling the media that they need to do a better job.
Well, thank you both. I love both of your voices and your opinions. I love following you both on Twitter. And so thank you so much for coming on and
thanks for having
talking
me.
To us for an hour.
That was great.
Thanks for having me, too.
Nice to meet you, Owen.
Nice to meet you too, Matt. Stop making sense. I don't like it.
Okay. All right.
All right. Take care. I am on vacation starting tomorrow, but Becky Worley will be here, and she will be joined by Brad Sams to talk about Microsoft Build, and she'll be joined by Kurt Wagner to cover all of the social media news, and Chelsea Stark will give her impressions of the Oculus Rift. And I will see you next Tuesday. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv, or you can email me directly at megan@twit.tv. You can also hit us up on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV. You can subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And find us on Facebook at facebook.com/technewstoday. And if you want to tweet at me, I am at Megan Maroney. Thanks to our technical director, Kara, and all the folks who help us produce this show every single day. And thanks to you for talking with us today. You will see Becky Worley tomorrow.